you know, you certainly don't need a geology degree. And, you know, in fact, if that was the route to success in this whole thing, there'd be a lot of really rich geologists. And I don't see those people all walking around. So a little bit of key knowledge is important. And I think you can actually build that in a few months of some sort of dedicated work, doing your own reading and research, and then applying that to companies and talking to the companies. I think that that's important.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by U.S. Gold Corp. U.S. Gold Corp. is a U.S.-focused gold exploration and development company advancing high-potential projects in Wyoming and Nevada. U.S. Gold Corp. has consolidated a district on Nevada's productive Cortez Trend and is advancing the Copper King project towards production in Wyoming. Led by a team of prolific company builders and renowned explorers, including Dave Mathewson, who's directly responsible for several major Nevada gold discoveries, U.S. Gold Corp. is well-financed and has an extremely tight share structure with less than 20 million shares outstanding, and it trades on a major stock exchange, the NASDAQ, under the ticker USAU. To learn more, go to usgoldcorp.gold. That's usgoldcorp.gold. Thanks for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another Mining Stock Education episode. If you'd like to engage the show and reach me, you can do so by emailing bill@miningstockeducation.com. And one of the emails that I've received the most over the years is, "Hey, Bill, I'm new to this sector. I discovered it. Don't come from a mining or a geological background. What are some good books that I can jump into?" Well, in answer to that question, I've shot a number of you back a couple of recommendations, but I've also brought on today's show an author of a book that I found very helpful. Myself, I have a liberal arts college degree, but even going to a college where they made me take a range of courses, I never took a geological course. Even in high school, I didn't take a geology course. So when I started focusing in on investing in the resource sector, I needed to really come up to speed with understanding geology and mining in general. And the book that we're going to be talking about today, via our conversation with its author, was very helpful. And how I came to this book, I was actually in the PDAC, that's the large mining conference, every March in Toronto. Last year in 2018, I was just perusing through the bookstore, and I was had this book in my hand, and a CFO of a cobalt company, he did not come from a geological or mining background. Apparently, he was recruited to be the CFO of this cobalt company. He looked at me, he said, "That's the book you need to get," because I didn't understand mining. But I picked that one up, and that was my crash course into understanding this new company that I work for. So he convinced me, bought the book, read it. I thought it was wonderful, so I reached out to the author. The author is Robert Stevens. The book is entitled Mineral Exploration and Mining Essentials. So Robert, thanks for coming on Mining Stock Education.
Yeah, hi Bill. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here this morning.
Well, let's get a little background on yourself before we talk about the book. What's your background, and how did you find your way into the mining sector?
I mean, I'm a professional geologist by training. So I went into geology undergrad at university, and I was fortunate enough actually to take a geology course in high school. And one of the things that we did as part of that course is we went on a field trip to collect minerals. And I thought, oh, I got to, you know, wander around in the bush and look for beautiful minerals as part of a career. That sounds like an exciting opportunity. So really, as an outcome of that course, I took geology at university. And then after that, I was very interested in getting out into the field and doing some exploration work. So for a number of years, I worked in the early stage exploration, you know, mapping and prospecting and trying to identify targets and some of that early drilling that sort of solidified my interest in the industry. And then from there, I got a faculty position at the British Columbia Institute of Technology in their mining program. And that, you know, love of the early stage, the exploration stage, extended throughout the mining cycle. And I had a really great opportunity to learn a lot about mining, you know, beyond geology, that ultimately led me to write the book.
Yeah, in your book, you don't deal as much looking at investments from the security angle. You look at it more from the geological mining angle, which is, as I said in the introduction, what I really needed to come up to speed on to be successful in this sector. But what was the genesis of this book? How did you even come to the place to where you published this document?
Yeah, well, so I live in Vancouver, which people don't know, Vancouver is a significant center for the mineral exploration and mining industry. Maybe not as big as Toronto when it comes to the investment side, but bigger when it comes to a lot of those junior exploration companies. And when I first started working at the British Columbia Institute of Technology, which was in 2000, I was looking for opportunities to engage more with industry. And a course kind of popped up that the Association for Mineral Exploration had offered a few years earlier, and it was referred to as the Broker's Course. And it was designed as a course really for the financial sector. And it hadn't been offered for a few years, and so I saw that opportunity and thought, well, I'd be really keen to develop up and offer that course. And so I did, and I think the first time I did it was in 2001 or maybe 2002. And over a few years, I gradually built up a manual that went along with the course. And I kept getting people asking me, wow, it's a great manual. You know, could I get another copy? There's somebody in my office who would like it. And, you know, that sort of encouragement ultimately led me to take that manual and turn it into a book because of the interest in it. And, you know, so the book was published basically in 2010. And since that time, it's probably sold a little over 6,000 copies, which is pretty good for a kind of technical book on, you know, exploration and mining. At one point, it was on the Globe and Mail's top 10 business books. So I was pretty pleased about that. So.
And you still teach the course, even ongoing, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I've been doing it off and on for many, many years. I really enjoy it. In fact, I just did one last Thursday. And, you know, we get a huge range of people coming into into the course. I mentioned it was referred to as the Broker's Course. And so certainly people in the financial sector, I get a lot of people from that area, you know, of course, investors. But I get, you know, there's a lot of people working in the exploration and mining sector, whether they're investor relations, accounting, legal, directors, that are interested in knowing more about some of those technical parts of the industry. And so that's a big group of the people that end up taking that course. I've done it in communities with Indigenous communities, for mining companies, directly for brokerage firms. So, you know, there's quite a lot of people that are interested in the mining industry for one reason or the other and would like to know a little bit more about those technical parts of geology and mining.
And one of the reasons why those of us that don't come from a mining background are attracted to it, as you know, the potential upside can be great, not only with discovery, but because of the boom-bust cycle and just the nature of mining, there's the potential for outsized returns, albeit with a lot of risk. With that being mm-hmm. said, for someone that understands the capital markets and investing, but they don't have a knowledge of mineral exploration and mining, what would you say, based on your role as a teacher and professor, what's the approximate average time for an individual, once they really devote themselves to learning more, to really become efficient at resource investing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess if I take that from a sort of a technical point of view, you know, being able to understand some of those technical aspects, geological, mineral exploration, mining, I mean, I think to become good at it and knowledgeable, it probably takes a few years, and I don't want to sound pessimistic, but it's sort of that experience, not only having a knowledge of some of the technical aspects, but then applying that and using that to, you know, decipher news releases, to follow companies. And I think, you know, the more experience one has, the better ultimately that you'll get on that. But with that said, you know, you certainly don't need a geology degree. And you know, in fact, if that was the route to success in this whole thing, there'd be a lot of really rich geologists, and I don't see those people all walking around. So, you know, a little bit of key knowledge is important, and I think you can actually build that, you know, in a few months of some sort of dedicated work, doing your own reading and research, and then applying that to companies and talking to the companies. I think that that's important, is you know, stretching that knowledge that you've gained by asking companies to tell you more about what they're working on, and asking them for some of that technical information. And that'll help to build experience and knowledge to be successful ultimately.
For a new resource investor, what would be some of those key things that they'd want to focus on in their initial months of learning this sector?
What I find when I talk to people, when I deliver the course, is terminology can be a big issue. Is just understanding some of those million-dollar terms that I often say that's how geologists keep employed, by creating all these fancy words. And so, knowing some of that key terminology, I think it is pretty important, so that you understand what you're talking about. And, I think... You just have to dig a little bit deeper on some of the aspects of the resource sector, some of the geology, without going too far. And I'll give you an example. There's a type of gold deposit called epithermal gold. So I think that is a useful term for people to know. It's a style of gold deposits that are common, let's say through Central and South America. And then you can go deeper to that and say, well, there's low sulfidation and high sulfidation epithermal deposits. And now you're starting to get more confusing. But I think that sometimes you don't need to know all that information. I think understanding something like an epithermal deposit is good, but needing to know a lot more detail than that might not really be that necessary. It's important for the geologists, but maybe not as important for an average investor. So you have to inform yourself of some of the key terms, but don't get caught up on trying to, have a PhD in geology, because I don't know that that's necessary or helpful.
Yeah, and I mean, if I could just break it down to the basics, if you really want to devote yourself here to being successful as an investor, you can just get out the old 3x5 flashcards and, like you say, write epithermal, write a definition, write some places in the world where it's found and some key things you should know as an investor. And you could do the same thing for a porphyry deposit. And I mean, this is the basics of learning any new trade, but those are some things you really want to do, especially to decipher press releases. Because when I started doing press releases, it was gibberish because I didn't know what a porphyry was.
Right.
So when you see new investors reading exploration company press releases, what would you say are some of the common mistakes that you see new investors making?
Right. Yeah. And just to follow on your last statement, and, in terms of, putting some key points down on cards, I think that's really important. Knowing some of those terms, like a porphyry is a good example. And then what I often tell people as a next step, okay, well, if you have a porphyry, what are the typical sort of grades and tonnage that you would get in a porphyry deposit? Or if you want to look at the drilling stage, what would be the sort of length of a typical drill intersection and the kind of grades in copper or gold that you might expect in a porphyry? And I think knowing that level of information can be really helpful without having to get, really deep into the geology again. But for press releases, I think one of the first, I always think there's a few questions as an investor you can ask yourself when you pick up a press release. And I think one of the key ones is, what is actually being reported on? Do you have to sift through all of the language that's in there and understand what really is being reported on and what is new that's being reported on? Because companies will often not so much recycle, but re-release. For example, if they've done 10 drill holes, they might have already released 5 of them, and then they're going to release the next 5, but they'll also re-release the first 5, which maybe had the greatest intersections and were the most exciting. So it's good when you read that news release that you understand what is the new information and what is actually being reported on in that news release. I think drilling, which is one of the key press releases that companies put out that investors are interested in and that really tell you something about what's going on beneath the ground, and that geology down in the ground. If you're going to have a mine, it's going to be the rocks in the ground. And that's what drilling does, is it tests those rocks down into the ground. So when you get a drilling press release, I often tell people, there's kind of 3 reasons why people drill: to discover a deposit, to expand a deposit, or to infill the drilling in that deposit so it's better understood and ultimately the company can do a great and a resource estimate, a grade and tonnage estimate. So I would ask yourself, you know, what is actually being reported on? If it's drilling, what was the reason they were drilling? And if you kind of know why they were drilling, then you can start to evaluate the significance of that that press release.
Would you invest in a company that doesn't include pictures with their press release when they're talking about drill results, cross sections and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, I might not be too restrictive in saying I wouldn't if they didn't do that, but
less likely.
I mean, it's so easy to get lots of great information now. Companies are already producing cross sections for their geological teams. They just need to, you know, recreate that in a form that's suitable for the investing public. I like companies that have lots and lots of disclosure with their press releases. I've seen ones that put out whole tables of all their assay results as part of a press release. You know, which might be maybe overdoing it and is too much information for some, but I like that level of disclosure. And for sure, you know, one of the other comments I was going to say about press releases is knowing where the project is at. So what's happened beforehand and what's likely to be the next steps after this press release. And if it's something like drilling and they're partway through a drill program, well, you need to put the drilling that's presented in that press release in context of all the other drilling that's gone on. And for that, you're going to need maps, you're going to need sections, you know, to be able to properly understand that. So, which leads me to maybe one other point I would make here is things like maps and sections. And I know in the people that I've taught over the years who aren't, you know, maybe that familiar with things like maps and sections, it can take a little, you know, they look at it initially and it's kind of overwhelming. They're not really sure what's being shown or what they should be looking at. And so I know that's a challenge, but I really encourage people to become familiar with reading and understanding maps and sections, because a picture is worth 1,000 words, as they say, and that is totally true in exploration and mining.
Yeah, and on that note, Robert, I just want to commend you for the pictures you put into your book, because that was actually the key factor for me. There's other books out there that talk about mineral exploration and understanding mining, but they do not have the pictures that you and the graphs and the charts that you put into yours. So that's part of what captivated me and made this information so easy to grasp, was because of the pictures that you put into the book.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. And, you know, when I teach a course on it, my PowerPoint is essentially images. I've got almost no words in it, and I talk around the images and I describe them, and that's how we step through it. And I find that a really effective way to deliver the information.
When you look at the current day market and early stage company, what are some key trends in exploration that you're observing now that the investors listening to us should pay most attention to?
Well, I think that one of the I think exciting and interesting developments in the exploration and mining sector that we're, I think, probably just still in the early stages of it is the need for metals for a low carbon future. And there's a lot of talk about that going on. You know, where I live in British Columbia, our government has just recently put in, will be introducing legislation about requiring increasing percentages of electric vehicles or zero emission vehicles that will be sold. And certainly this is not the only location where that's happening around the world. And the key with that is the metals that are going to be needed to move us away from hydrocarbons. Copper is an essential one, and that's not a new commodity, but I see the demand for copper as only increasing. You know, you hear numbers like it takes 80 pounds of copper for an electric vehicle compared to about 20 in a typical internal combustion vehicle. And I think that while there are a lot of known copper deposits that have not been put into production, the number that are known and that are likely economically viable with current copper prices is not that high. And to me, that just suggests we need higher copper prices to A, make some of those deposits viable as mines, and B, to encourage that increased exploration so that we can discover new ones. So a really stalwart commodity like copper, I think, is a key one. And then there's the others that are in the battery technologies, cobalt, lithium, just as two examples. I think those are exciting. I think the challenge with those is that the technologies are developing and they're evolving, and where a commodity like cobalt could be very useful for a battery, but if it becomes too expensive, then the manufacturers and developers are looking for other metals that can substitute in. So I think it's exciting, but investors need to watch that one closely and look at the technological changes and what kind of metals those new technologies are going to require, to be able to know which are the ones that are going to be exciting. With that being said, there can still be short-term excitement. I take cobalt again, where the price ran up over $40 a pound in anticipation of a, big demand for cobalt. And although it's come back down, there was a nice opportunity there for some investing. Mm-hmm. And it has come back down, but I think it's probably going to go up again. So I think, there may be multiple stages within a metal like that where the opportunities are good.
What about artificial learning, machine learning applied to exploration? I'm sure you're on top of this trend. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, yeah, the ability to evaluate enormous amounts of data is certainly a trend in the industry. I'll just take assay data, for example, or geochemical data from samples. The average company or analysis will return, say, 25 or 30 different elements from any one sample. And it's a bit hard for individuals to, sort of crunch all that data. But the ability, again, to evaluate and look for trends and manage mass amounts of data, I think is significant. Another of which, and this is particularly useful for the geological teams, is your ability to model results in three dimensions. And I've been seeing some demonstrations where you can you can see all the drill holes in 3D. You can tap on a drill hole and it'll come up, and you can tap on individual intersections and get the data. And the ability of the geologist to try to unravel complex geology beneath the surface and really understand where the mineralization trends are occurring, I think that's been a significant improvement over in my early days. We had sheets of linens with cross sections on it. You'd be flipping through them to try and, model this out. That's a lot harder than a really great three-dimensional software, which you can actually, with virtual reality, stand right in the middle of it. So, that's pretty impressive. That's an important one.
Yeah, and I think in terms of communicating a potential an existing deposit and how the company imagines it becoming a mine, communicating that to the investment community at PDAC, I put on a virtual headset and I flew over a deposit in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And like you said, just move the controls, you go in and out, you see the different grades and how they envision. I mean, it was quite amazing. And it's even as I'm talking to you now, I can still envision what the company envisions.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting. One of the key things I do when I deliver a course is I put a lot of emphasis on trying to help people visualize what's going on beneath the ground. And actually, that's what geologists need to learn too. And it's not so easy because these mineral resources are hidden. But if you can get a picture in your mind of what's going on beneath the ground, I think the ability to understand why somebody drilled where they did, or the significance of one set of drill results over another, is really helpful. And so this technology, which you're going to increasingly see on the web, on companies' websites, I think will be really helpful for investors to be able to picture those deposits as well and assess, what the opportunities are going forward.
In your own investing, are there any specific jurisdictions you like and you focus on and why?
Okay, well, I guess when I'm looking, there's a range of things that I would look at, but where I would sort of start with is I like safe, stable jurisdictions that are well regulated, that have a history of exploration and mining, And that have, reasonably good infrastructure to be able to get in and out, have a good geological database, good geology, obviously, is a critical one as well. And so that leads me to generally first world stable jurisdictions, Canada, most of the major mining provinces in Canada, in the U.S., places like Nevada, Idaho, and Alaska, Australia. Being a third, I mean, those three countries alone, I would say, are excellent. But they're well established jurisdictions, and I guess some would argue that the opportunity for brand new discoveries may be more difficult because people have been working there and doing work for a long time. I think you can extend out to places in Central and South America. Mexico, which has a well-established mining jurisdiction, still, I think, is underexplored relative to much of Canada. And so there's lots of good opportunities there. I think South America, one of the things that I'm also always looking at increasingly is around social acceptance of mining, which is partly why I like jurisdictions that have a history of mining. And, there is, Peru, for example, great jurisdiction, but the social side of it could be a bit of a challenge. Africa, lots of opportunities there, but the challenge, I would say, is governments, unstable governments, changes in policies that are not favorable for mining, midway through rewriting contracts, those kinds of things are a challenge. So first and foremost, I like the stable, well-established mining jurisdictions.
What about where we are in the boom-bust cycle? What are your thoughts? Because mining's so cyclical, as you know. Where do you think we are? Are we at the bottom or are we on the way up? What are your thoughts?
Well, I would say we're on the way up. I mean, if you look back over a trend of decades and you try to kind of map out those peaks and troughs, the sort of peak to trough is anywhere between sort of, 3 to 7 years before you start to see a pretty steady uptick. And our peak was really in 2012. The trough, as it seemed, was sort of around, 2015, or 2016. We're in 2019 now, and we've seen a bit of an increase since the bottom, but not a lot. So if I look at historical trends, we would be on a move up in the cycle now. I'm not seeing in the short term that we're going to see a big move up. But I think over the next, 2 to 3 years, we're definitely going to be on an uptick. And in the medium term, all of the need for metals to drive new technological changes in that low carbon society, I think that leads us into a second super cycle. You know, the 2000s were kind of the super cycle driven a lot by Chinese growth. I think in the next one, it's going to be this really significant increase in metals to drive a low-carbon future for our planet.
The book is Mineral Exploration and Mining Essentials. I've been speaking to Robert Stevens, the author, who's also a professor, geologist, investor. Robert, if people want to reach out to you, what would be the best way to do that?
Yeah, they can email me just at rob@miningessentials.com, and that's Mining Essentials all as one word. I'd be happy to hear from anybody.
Your course offerings, is that public knowledge as well, if a listener would be interested in taking the course in person?
I don't do it on a regularly scheduled basis at the moment, so if somebody is interested, they could email me and I can let them know when the next opportunity is coming up. And usually I used to keep them active on my website, but not as much anymore because they tend to be sort of here and there. So the best thing would be to email me and I can let people know when the next one is.
Excellent. Well, Rob, I appreciate you coming on Mining Stock Education and sharing with my listeners your knowledge and talking about your book. I look forward to speaking with you again.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Bill. Great chatting with you.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by Blue Sky Uranium Corporation. Blue Sky Uranium has first mover advantage in Argentina in the world's newest uranium and vanadium district. With an existing near-surface deposit that is open for expansion, Blue Sky Uranium also controls a massive district-scale land package with mineralization along a 145-kilometer long trend. Blue Sky Uranium possesses tremendous exploration upside and is an excellent leverage play on rising uranium and vanadium prices. The company is run by a best best-in-class management and technical team with proven exploration and development success in Argentina. Blue Sky Uranium trades under the ticker BSK on the Toronto Venture Exchange and as BKUCF on the OTC. For more information and to stay on top of the latest news, go to blueskyuranium.com. That's blueskyuranium.com. Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.